You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, this is Mijn with Kennis.
Hi, I'm Jan-Willem van de Ven.
Co-director of ADE, and you're listening to Rebel Radio, so enjoy.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. I'm your host, Josh Levine. This week, we are heading across to Europe. My guests are Mindert Kennis and Jan-Willem van Den, the co-directors of the Amsterdam Dance Event. ADE is the largest global gathering of the electronic music community. I went over in 2019. You can check out my interview with Junior Sanchez, which I recorded on site there. And this is a massive event. It's over 1,000 events with over 600,000 attendees total across, I think, 4 or 5 days coming up. In October, so right around the time we're launching. And, you know, we talk about their vision for what ADE means in the global dance community. We talk a lot about their partnership and how they make things work together and kind of how they've evolved this brand that's now over 25 years old into something that can kind of be the barometer of the future of dance music. So it's a great interview. Let's get into it right now. Yeah, well, I'm excited to talk to you guys. I appreciate you making time and excited to hear about what's happening with ADE. If you don't mind, I want to start a little bit about you guys personally and kind of your journey to this point. Sure. And, you know, I'm always interested in how we got to where we are now. So I'll ask you both the same question. Do you remember the first record that you ever bought for yourselves?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, what was actually, if I can start, that was the Joshua Tree from U2.
Yeah.
The first CD I bought. Nice. I think I was 10 years old. So I saved up all my money to buy that. And of course, that's the one you always remember.
What a great record to start your journey with.
Yeah.
That's an incredible one. How about you, Jan?
I made I don't know even the name anymore, but if you record a CD, so you copy it, right? So mm-hmm. I'm from the time, the age of copying CDs instead of buying them. But the first copy I had was 36 Chambers from All the Best.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, so
that's a way cooler answer.
I don't know. Those are both classic records that we should all have in our collection.
An illegal copy from Wu-Tang is quite ghetto, right?
Nice. And then how about electronic music? What was your introductions to electronic music? Your first rave or your first DJ set that you remember?
For me, it was because I was born in 1977. So for me, it was from Miami Vice, the Crocker theme.
Okay.
I recorded that on a tape, on a cassette, and I listened to that over and over. And I got kind of addicted to the synth pads that were using in. And so that was, and then afterwards, I started listening to Pink Floyd a lot. And then I think it was the early 90s when the Belgian new beat stuff came along. And yeah. People passed me mixtapes of that. And then it was all the club thing and the rave thing was going on. And then afterwards was drum and bass.
Sure.
Years of jungle and drum and bass. And then mm-hmm. onward.
Sure.
I have an older brother, and he was able to go to clubs, and which I wasn't, obviously not old enough for. But so he introduced me to the music without being in a club. But I remember listening to Laurent Garnier, the Big Babu, at some point, and it was an awkward setting because I was at home listening to this kind of music, which you should listen in a club, and I was like, wow, this is just so off from everything I've heard before. So I really enjoyed that moment. Yeah, I still know it.
That's cool. Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, dance music has now become this global phenomenon. You know, I'm a little bit older than you guys, and I started my career in at a dance music magazine here in Los Angeles, and you couldn't find anybody, you know, even around Los Angeles who even knew what dance music was, right? A DJ was something you saw at a bar mitzvah or a wedding or, you know, high school dance, and now, you know, how far the culture's come, I think is so amazing that it's really in every corner of the world, and it's influence pop music and country. And, you know, I know you guys have Diplo coming up this year, who's, you know, taking it across genre borders and geographic borders and cultures and all of that stuff. It's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Well, so I know you guys are fairly new to ADE. Last couple of years, but as I understand it, it's was it 1996 that it launched?
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm a little curious how, you know, from your perspective, how the kind of how, you know, an organization like this rides the ups and downs, right? And certainly, you know, dance music has had explosions of popularity and then dips. You know, in the U.S. and elsewhere, we've had big legal challenges to rave culture, and the music is affected by that. And it's definitely not a straight line on a chart of increasing success every year, right? And so I'm kind of curious, you know, how do you guys handle that, or how have you seen ADE handle that even before you joined, the sort of ebb and flow of a culture?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because in the Netherlands, I think from when ADE started, even before that, like the early 90s, it kind of has been an upgoing trend since then.
That's fair.
I think from, you know, when it started, like I said, you know, in the early 90s with the Roxy here in Amsterdam and the new beat craze in Belgium, and to rave culture, of course, we had Gabber in mid 90s, you know, the really hard the hard stuff, and then, you know, through drum and bass and progressive house, it always has been like it created this base layer of popularity for dance music, which enabled it to become a mainstream sound, like from the late 90s already. And we were used to listening to dance music on mainstream radio since the early 90s, of course, with the rise of people like Tiësto and Armin van Buuren and Carl Cox and those kind of artists. So before I was at ADE, I worked at Spinning Records, and we kind of, when I worked there, we kind of had a head start, because it was already super popular, and it was kind of normal that you would listen to non-vocal commercial dance music on the radio, which kind of laid a layer of success to build upon. And of course we weren't part of, well, actually Jan was part of ADE before 2019, but I guess the whole Dutch industry here in Amsterdam always broke this wave of continuous, I don't want to say super success, but at least, you know, this layer of a foundation of popular music that mm-hmm. that you could utilize for mm-hmm. building an industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from a event perspective, it has been tough, especially in the first years of ADE, starting as a fair where a trade fair where Dutch music was being sold to Dutch copyright was being sold to foreign buyers of music, mm-hmm. And at some point, all these managers and all these artists were at ADE, so they started organizing a small showcase festival in the beginning of these years. Not every club was happy to join, right? So it started with just two clubs, and there was a lot of convincing needed to get them over.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the way, so I started in 2009 at ADE as an intern, and then we were already on a riding the wave, right? So when I came in, we had about 35 event locations participating in the ADE festival, the Showcase festival, for 2 or 3 days. And nowadays we're on, I don't know, 150 locations, 600 events for the festival, and still a lot of others for conference and arts and culture program, which is a cross-cultural program. If we all going to sell out every venue this year or every event, I think it's about 600,000 people coming over. But it's it hasn't been easy in the beginning. But at some point, you catch that wave, and from there on, the industry, the dance industry, the electronic music industry became more mainstream. That's what managers sure. was just saying, and we captured that momentum, we facilitated the a red arch around the third week of October for everybody in this industry and for all its fans all over the world. Mm-hmm. And with the popularity of the music, the event grew with it. So yeah, we nurtured that momentum, and that's where we are right now.
That's great. How much, as you said, it started out really as a way to promote Dutch music, right? So how much do you think about sort of that balance between the Dutch music industry versus, you know, now the global community that you serve, and you know, how much attention is to making sure that you're also still promoting the local industry?
We're facilitating this infrastructure. So we're facilitating the conference. We're giving an international podium to local talent. And being it in Amsterdam, being in Holland, that means a lot of artists on our lineup. I believe we have about 2,500 artists this year. A lot of them are from Holland, obviously, because it's in Holland, so the infrastructure sure. is there. That's within the fact organizing it in Holland, right? So mm-hmm. we're still keen on promoting Dutch talent, but it's not only Dutch talent, right? So sure. it's an international platform, and we do want to facilitate the whole industry and bring together everybody from this industry. So it's a balance, and we got a programming team for instance for the conference. We got a big programming team, and they all always have this as a decision in their mind, so to keep the balance right.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that team a little bit. I think I heard you on another interview, you said you're around 60 people. How important is it to hire people from the dance music community, and you know, how do you balance that with looking for outside perspectives and knowledge that, you know, that people can bring to the community?
Yeah, so we have a core team of 6 people only, you know, okay. on the whole year round.
Okay.
And then We hire more people along the way during the year. Ends up 60 where we are right now. Mm-hmm. And of course, we try to hire as much as a diverse crowd as possible, because, you know, as a facilitating foundation, because we're not a company, you know, we're a nonprofit foundation, you know, we facilitate this momentum for the industry and for all the artists and basically for the whole scene. To facilitate that, you need to have knowledgeable people from all sorts of and all parts of the electronic music scene. So that's what we try to do. You know, we try to not only for the programming, for the conferences, but also the festival manager needs to be knowledgeable and everybody, you know, assisting to that. Yeah, of course, we try to maintain as much, how do you say it, voelsprieten, as much of knowledge from the scene within the organization. And obviously, mm-hmm. it's 100% because there's so much going on. But we try to cover that as much as possible.
Yeah, and we had to, due to COVID, we had 2 years to find your team, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a minute, right? So, as you said, you had this break that maybe was not planned, and I'm sure you used the time as wisely as you could.
It didn't feel like a break. I can tell
you. No, I'm sure it didn't. But so now coming back live this year, what are the big changes or innovations or things that you were sort of like were able to make good use of the time off, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, the biggest takeaway from COVID is that having night culture is not, you know, it was always kind of a given to a lot of people. It was always there, and people was always saying, yeah, of course you can go out at night, and of course you can be young, and of course you can mingle, and of course you can connect with people. But that's, you know, people learned the hard way that if you take that away, you know, you're going to take a lot of people's progression and a lot of people, how they express themselves. And sorry, what?
Well-being, the well-being of people.
Being away, and you know, you see that a lot in surveys that are being done about, you know, young people who are struggling with their mental health because mm-hmm. they can't go out, because mm-hmm. they can't do what we were able to do when we were, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old.
Sure.
And that's not only our takeaway, because we already kind of knew it, but, you know, especially from people outside of the scene, everybody kind of realizes that, you know, what we do is not just some hedonistic wave your hands in the air and then go to bed, you know, late at night. It's something which really has proper value to your expression and to your development as a human being. So unfortunately, it took a pandemic, but a thing that we take away and a lot of people take away from it is that it's really important. And mm-hmm. So that's for us the main takeaway. And I guess from a strategic perspective, we kind of made a strategy when we started at the end of 2019. After 2 years of COVID, this strategy still stands. So that's also for us to realize that it's still a good strategy. And maybe you can tell a little bit about the changes there.
Yeah. So we basically brought down all of our conferences to until two, it's AD Lab, which is our entry-level conference for ambitious creators and young professionals who are making their first steps in their music career. And we got AD Pro, which is our pro conference. The idea behind it is that people who start in this music industry are they want to gain knowledge and see masterclasses, do workshops, and for us it means if they make their first successful steps, later on they will convert to pro visitors. Mm-hmm. Second one is to create a cross-culture program, an in-depth program next to all these events, all these parties, where let's say night culture is being celebrated without the dancing and the partying, but it's more about audiovisual installations and mental health, and it's more let's say the culture around electronic music instead of listening with your ears to a beat. And so these are the four pillars we created. So that's on B2C side, it's festival, arts and culture, and B2B is lab and pro. And it makes it more tangible to understand, because we got all, as being a platform festival and conference throughout the whole city, we used to be like this black and yellow monster entering the city, and you see it everywhere, and it's kind of, you can't really touch it or understand it, and we try to make it more understandable and create several pillars, so you will know where every event, single individual event, what you're up to.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I've been to, you know, hundreds of conferences and festivals. I've produced hundreds of events myself, my company. You know, I feel like every time you're at a conference, every time I'm at a conference, I run into people that are like, oh, we could do this better. Or, you know, it's easy to pick out the flaws. And you know, obviously behind the scenes, there's so much that goes into getting things right that there's always going to be room for improvement. I'm curious, are there events that you guys attend or have seen that have inspired you to maybe think differently about ADE?
Yes, of course. I mean, you take away something from every event that you go to, and every event has you know, special details or special angles that you want to discover. And you know, talking with electronic music, you know, it also depends on the backdrop. You know, you have, I mean, in Miami, you have the Miami backdrop, the same as in Ibiza, it's the same. Amsterdam, you have like the rainy shitty weather as a backdrop, you know.
And the canals.
Yeah.
And the canals. But that,
I mean, it is a beautiful city.
Yes, but it enables something different for every
different
conference.
For certain.
Yes. Yeah. In Miami, you're at the pool parties. In Ibiza, you're also at the pool, but it's, you know, you're in Ibiza. And in Amsterdam, because the weather is most of the time not so good, you do a lot of business. So it's a lot of business-orientated event. Yeah. And you know, so everything makes an event special. And I think with ADE, what makes ADE so special is that you have all these industries doing really, you know, hard-hitting industry stuff, which means there's a lot of industry coming, which means there's a lot of artists performing. And when there's more artists performing, there's more industry coming. So you have like the symbiosis.
Sure.
There's more fans
for ADE. Sorry?
Yeah.
And I said, and eventually that brings out more fans, right? Yeah. So with these pretty parts coming, people will go to the events.
Sure.
And of course, we go to Dubai, and then we learn a lot from that to see how that's going every year. And so, yeah, you try to kind of cherry pick on different experiences and see if you can add that to your own experience, while at the same time stay at the core of what makes your experience so special.
Sure. Yeah, one of the things I've noticed, I mean, I've worked a lot with South By over the years, they keep a really tight control on the events and the venues around Austin. And it's, you know, we tried to do some events around them, and they make it really hard to do. And then in Miami, it's quite the opposite, right? There's, you know, I run into people all the time that didn't go to the conference, didn't buy a pass, they're throwing parties, and it's a much looser sort of organization. I wonder how you guys think about that in terms of, you know, control versus community.
Well,
sure.
So being a platform festival, your community and your stakeholders are key, right? So if we organize it all by ourselves and put a gate in there, and you lose it at some point. So sure. It has to be like a balance between these two opposites.
Yeah.
The approach we have is that we work together with the municipality, and basically every event in Amsterdam during that week that wants to organize an electronic music event in that week has to be an ADE approved event. Mm-hmm. And of course there are places where you don't need any permits from the municipality, so you can do what you want, but in mm-hmm. the end the output is that basically every event in Amsterdam is an ADE official event without pushing them and having this hawk approach. You need to be ADE, but
right.
we try to use our soft skills to convince people that with every single promoter and every has his own engine and his own community starting to organize these events, and together we built this huge international platform, and we mm-hmm. bring it up a level higher. And if you can enable them to become better and bigger, and you can use your own marketing power to give them wings, mm-hmm. it's a win-win.
It's a typical Dutch
approach.
Yeah, it's typically to find to find common ground and to see how you can prosper together. I think it's really at the kind of at the core of how Dutch people do business. At least, not all of them, of course. But
that's great, and that's probably we should all probably learn from that. I think America tends to be very competitive, which is maybe has different advantages, but also some disadvantages.
Everything, has its advantages and disadvantages. That's true.
Yeah, of course.
It also depends on how things are being organized by a municipality. Sure. This has grown over the years. I used to be the festival manager of ADE. Mm-hmm. I started in 2009, and from somewhere 2011 or 12 onwards, I was a festival manager. And at the beginning, we didn't have this collaboration with the municipality. So we were just organizing, and they were all getting like this individual permit questions. And at some point we sat together and we were like, okay, we should create a process together, because we want you to be our conversation partner. And you will have your own stakeholders. And that grew, and now we got this project group together with the city council with a lot of people in it, and everybody has his own responsibility in this process, and it works really well. I think it's one of the best showcases working together with the city council. Yeah,
nice. I mean, that's a great insight. And I think about, this brand that's now over 20 years old, 25 years old. As we talked about earlier, it's very different from where it started, as it should be. Are there other kind of moments that stand out as really pivotal where the brand, changed or grew, or sort of, important lessons? I'm sure there are too many to tell, but some of the key ones that stand out along the way.
Well,
you first.
Okay. Well, I think that the one of the most unique aspects of ADE is that we leave all the creative inputs, the musical input and the lineup input and artist input to the scene, so to speak. It's kind of a weird thing, but to the venues and to the promoters, and that's what makes ADE relevant, every year. Because if it would be us, and again, we're a foundation, not a company, so that makes us super neutral, and it makes us an umbrella brand,
sure,
which engages all these venues and all the promoters to do what they do best, and that is to utilize their network and their platform to do what they do best and grow artists and grow genres and grow hypes, etc. at ADE. And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the key success things of ADE, and that's what keeps ADE relevant to, again, every year, a new crowd and a new younger crowd that discovers the latest trends and the latest genres and the latest hypes at ADE. Because if we would have the best team in the world who would be on top of everything this year, they would miss out in it 4 years, and then sure. we would become obsolete at some point, you know.
Yeah,
so that's one of the driving factors, I believe, at least, that keeps ADE relevant and successful.
That's great.
Yeah, it's hard to top this one, but what I think is what has been crucial in growing our brand is also, let's say, the design. So at some point we stick to the black and yellow. We created the cube, and we did it consistently and without a lot of distraction, and that became a really popular brand and an ID, right? So IP, sorry, yeah.
If you talk about one moment in time, because from probably a US perspective, you know, once the ADE craze began in 2014, and I was lucky enough to be at the first row, working at Records and working with Martin Garrix and Oliver Helles and that stuff. But the funny thing is, over here, it was already big, and it just grew bigger. And so there was not really, of course, everything went more well-known worldwide. But as ADE, as the platform, it kind of always grew steadily to where we are right now. So
sure.
I don't think there's really, you know, a few super pivotal points that you can point out.
Yeah, that makes sense. Speaking of, you know, your background, it's been in and coming from a for-profit company into a nonprofit. How does that change your approach to brand strategy? And, you know, obviously nonprofits still need to make money. They need to generate revenue. But as you're pointing out, there's a very different perspective on all of that.
There's, like you said, there's pros and cons to everything. Of course, if you're a for-profit company, you're always more, you know, you want to perform more, and, you know, you want to beat the competition, and that enables you to grow. If you work for a nonprofit, it's not about beating the competition. It's about, you know, that sounds a little bit weird, but like kind of more of a providing organization.
Sure.
And that also gives you, it has its pros and cons. I mean, the one is the commercial is nice, because you really can go and, you know, you have this competitive thing. And if you are a nonprofit, it gives you a really a good feeling to be able to organize this for everyone and to see that everybody prospers from it. So yeah, it's two completely different worlds, but they are both really nice in their own way.
Has there been one thing that's been kind of hardest to adjust to?
Yes, of course. It's the rules around it. You know, if you're more on commercial, you can just do anything you want. Basically, it's just the sky's the limit, and just you have a crazy idea and just go for it and fund it, and then crush everyone else. And, you know, as a nonprofit, you have to just think once, twice, three times, and have way more discussions about it to see, you know, who does it benefit? You know, does it benefit one party more than the other? So it's more of a balanced approach compared to a commercial company, for sure. Yeah.
Fair enough. Thinking about that, I know you have a number of important stakeholders, partners. I know you have big sponsors in Heineken and Desperados. And, you know, again, in the U.S., it's not a fair comparison, but companies here have often had a tough time with dance music, kind of integrating into the culture and pushing their commercial agendas, you know, that are sometimes very different from what the scene wants. And I know it's different there, but I am curious, you know, how do you make sure that those partners like those are happy and getting what they need, and at the same time the scene and the industry is served and not kind of overrun by brand advertisers?
Yeah, I think the difference is that the people who work at the brands are more invested in electronic music, so they really know what the scene is about, and they are really part of the scene, most of it, because especially with the Dutch offices of the respective brands,
of course,
most of the people, you know, they have experience in it, so they know exactly what they're talking about. So it becomes a way more natural cooperation than a super commercial company that comes from outside of the scene and just sees what's happening and just sees a lot of young people and think, okay, I want to harvest those young people, you know, and that's when you get this friction. And I believe that in the Netherlands, at least here, that's less so, because the people just know, because the electronic music is such a integral part of society that, sure, you know, it's not this there's not this contradiction between it.
No. Besides the money a partnership brings with it, you have to gain from both sides, mm-hmm, within this collaboration. So if there's only money involved and you don't have any common ground, the partnership won't work.
Yeah.
Basically, let's say a basic rule on if something's going to work. If it's only money that brings you together, it won't work eventually. It might work for a year or 2 years, but if you want to grow a sustainable relationship with a partner, you have to have more common ground than just giving a bag of money and connecting the brands, because people won't take it.
Totally.
But it takes a lot of time to really create a sustainable relationship with a partner, and we have a big partner team, a partnership team, to create that relationship and to identify both goals and to create that, to integrate that into one activation or multiple activations on online and event wise. But it's like a complex game,
sure,
right? But it's a nice one, and we're happy with the way we're doing it, and it succeeds for now. So it's
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I love what you're saying. I think it is about people in those companies needing to understand the cultures that they're marketing to, and having the time, and, you know, multi-year partnerships where you get to learn and grow together is so important. And, you know, we see so many brands that dip in and out of dance music or in and out of whatever, you know, scene, and they don't get the benefit of learning if they don't come back and keep doing it. And, you know, you guys are spot on that it's all about the people on both sides of the table that need to be able to think together and work together.
Yeah. You can't just come in, pick a community and then go away. It's the community.
That's right.
You need to nurture that relationship with every part in that community before they really acknowledge your brand and support your brand, right? It's
yeah,
not about, yeah. So, but I think a lot of at least a few brands nowadays really understand that, and it's more than just about reach or impressions, or it's about.
It's really definitely getting better and better.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So I heard you say in another interview, you described ADE as a sort of thermometer for the dance music community and kind of what's to come. So I know you haven't had it yet this year, but I'm curious, from what you're seeing so far, you know, what is the future looking like for dance music for the next year ahead?
Well, you really have to ask us, afterwards, because the funny thing is, we, like I said, you know, we don't dictate,
sure,
what's going on.
Of course.
So we're not like, and that's different from, for instance, my old job, where we try to push a certain,
right,
sound or a certain artist. We are
of
like
course.
the and then, but you only can read the thermometer if you take it out and then read what are the degrees. So most of the time afterwards we hear, oh, you listen to that and that sound, you know, that was really that started at ADE. And then, you know, we think, okay, yes, this is exactly what we should do. Yeah. So we're just super proud afterwards that we were able to facilitate that.
Sure.
Yeah. But what we do see already is that a lot of industry is coming to Amsterdam. So and that was being away for 2 years. There was obviously at the beginning of this year was a concern. So do we still have that momentum? Is everybody coming to ADE, or at least is everybody asking themselves, am I going to Amsterdam in the third week of October? Mm-hmm. And I think we are able to say now that has succeeded, and a lot of industry, a lot of fans are coming, ticket sales are going well for conference and for all festivals. So from a, let's say, global perspective, we're happy to acknowledge the fact that still, ADE still got this momentum.
Nice. How many events do you guys plan to attend personally?
Well, the rule. Go ahead.
We still have to make our own agenda definite. But I used to be the festival manager, and then I had about, I don't know, 25 to 30 festival events mm-hmm. at day and night, which I was mm-hmm. going to shake hands and see everything's going well, and then just to show your face and what I said, use your soft skill to show everybody you're doing this together. Nowadays we are more on the boring part of ADE, because it's on the one hand showing ADE to politicians and the mayor and stuff like mm-hmm. that, and mm-hmm. otherwise be there when there's a crisis or anything, right? So it's you don't want to swap with our roles during
during the event.
It's much more fun to just go to an event
and
listen to music. It is good for us to see what's going on in all the conference venues and all the festival venues, arts and culture, to show around some people what we're doing, and to really get a grip on what you've been, to get it more concrete, because all the things we did till next week are all quite abstract, right? So it's about what we are going to do. I'm really happy when it starts and we can really see the outcome of what we've been doing for more than a year.
Yeah, nice. Well, I'm sorry I'm going to miss it in person this year. I will be there next year and excited to see how it all comes together. I have a quick lightning round that I want to do before I let you guys go on with your evenings, if you don't mind. And you can both answer, or you can take turns, whatever you prefer. What's your favorite city to travel to?
Yeah, shall I just start? Because
sure.
I am most favorite. I don't know if it's my most favorite, but the most intense experience in a city was for me was Mumbai.
Oh, Mumbai. Wow. I bet.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
We did ADE for 3 or 4 times over there, 80 global sessions. So I traveled a lot to Bombay, and it's just it's there was so many impressions and so many different stuff than from here back here in Europe. So it's
amazing
for me. Berlin.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
nice. Yeah, that's a great city. I've spent a little time there. This one I am going to make you both answer. Who's your favorite DJ?
I'd say Laurent Gonyé, because of the first song I heard, and he's still a legend, and I'm like, he's such a gentleman, so I'll just stick with him.
I can't call one. No, it's just too difficult.
I will say, because nobody likes this question.
So no, because it's too difficult, because you you like so many different artists for so many different reasons. I mean, a movie, for instance, is strangely enough, is way easier than a DJ.
Okay. All right, well, we'll give you this one then. What's the last great book you read?
Sorry?
What's the last great book you read?
The last great book I read? Well, the last book I read was Harry Potter with my little
hour. Okay.
It's a great book. It's a great book.
Sure.
Also a difficult one. The last great or the greatest? What is it now? There's a Dutch writer. It's called Thomas Oldehuyveld. He wrote a book called Hex. I really like that.
Nice.
You, Jan? You still there?
Yeah. I just read this book just before the war, and it's what's my favorite podcast maker? The one with the angry voice. For Boekestein, who's the other one? You know,
sorry.
It's Rob de Wijk, and it's a book about India and China becoming the new most dominant world power in the world, and it's sure. and it's he stated over there in the book that there's going to be a war really soon. And it's just a month later, it happens. And this guy still got a daily podcast about the war in Ukraine. And he's a really, how can I say this?
Knowledgeable guy.
But he's not fun to listen, right? So it's always like, I don't want to hear it, but
heavy.
He's a heavy guy, heavy mind.
Nice. So you brought up movies earlier. What movie do you think you've seen the most in your life?
That's Apocalypse Now.
Oh, okay, good one.
Great or movie. Alien. Aliens or Apocalypse Now. I think
it's nice. Both good movies.
The most?
Wow. Flutter.
Flutter, no. I don't tend to really overwatch movies again and again and again.
Yeah.
But I do like Quentin Tarantino. So all his movies, I really like the conversations, right? The dialogues and the music he uses. And it's called them. It's one of them, I guess.
Awesome. Well, last question. If I worked for you guys, if I was one of your six or you added a seventh, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
If you would work,
if I worked for ADE, what would I hear you saying over and over?
That's also a good one. What do I say? Let me answer for Jan Willem.
Maybe you can answer for each other.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have these things I tend to tell over and over. Do I, Jan?
I would say you will say just make it work.
Something
like that. Yeah, that's basically. You don't want to have too many details. You're like, okay, I just want to make want to make you make it work.
For
your film, it's hold on a second, have you thought about this?
Nice. I think that speaks to a good partnership.
Yeah.
And basically, so we're a nonprofit foundation, and that means our team is not too worried about making money. Even more specific, they're just spending money, right? So, and sure. I'm the financial one of the two of us. So I always ask people, okay, so this is a great idea, but how are we gonna how can we what's this gonna cost and how are we gonna make it work on that, yeah. that perspective financially.
Nice.
Because we have a really creative team and that's good, and you don't want to have them think about limitations, but sure. From our perspective, we do have to think about the limitations, and most of the part there are financial limitations. Yeah,
I should have asked this earlier, but with you guys as co-directors, is there what's one thing you do to really make that partnership work and make sure you're in sync and complementing each other?
I think it's we have been speed dated to each other. So Meinert was already on the advisory board. I was away. Mm-hmm. I was working at ADE, but I was away for 3 years. And I, at some point, the advisory boards asked Meinert to do this job because he was already knowledgeable, being the marketing director of Spinning Records. And he said, okay, I can think about it, but I don't want to do it alone because I don't have the knowledge about, let's say, Amsterdam and the festival and conference itself. So they came up with me and we've been speed dated, and we did a lunch together, and we said to each other, let's just do this as on a short-term base or on an interim base. We did it for a few months, and I think we complement each other by incident, by coincidence, to be honest. Yeah, it works, and I think the reason why it works is because we are not we don't need anything to make it work. It just works, and
nice.
we're not people that want to be on the stage. And we were both like, okay, let's just keep on the background, and that means we give each other the space to be a co-director nice. Instead of taking the stage, and we're not competing to each other. We're like, okay, sometimes he's the one on stage, and sometimes I am, and then we both got different roles and different capacities, or what's the right word? Competences, and that just works. Yeah. Do you have anything nice. To say, Ryan, on this?
No, that's good.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for making time for this. Everybody listening should get out to ADE, if not this year, definitely next year. And we'll be watching and excited to see what happens next.
Cool. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
Yo, that was Meinert Kennis and Jan Willem van Den from ADE on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. If you work in dance music, you definitely want to be at ADE. Buy a ticket. Get out there next year, if not this year. I'm sure I'll be there next year and we can party in Amsterdam together. And most importantly, come back next week for Rebel Radio. Peace.